What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, actually in person, is Adam. We're recording a podcast together, Kalal.
Yes.
And we are one day away from Braves spring training. Kalal, and we are Atlanta's own. Two Atlanta natives recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports with wacky-ass hijinks, bullshit, and analysis. Adam, how's it going, sir?
Graham, it's amazing. Look at you.
Yeah, look at you.
You exist.
Yeah.
We could read each other's facial reactions and, hand cues and gestures.
You're making
and
a lot of gestures right now.
Oh, big gesture guy today. I mean, the wall upstairs filled in okay, but, nothing compares to that beautiful face of yours.
Wow. I'm very flattered.
It is an honor to be back in here in person with you, still in our outdoor Adam Kalal under the deck studio.
Yes.
Newly renovated.
Yeah, it looks really nice down here. It's just a pure display of craftsmanship in terms of just really just design, in terms of how you've arranged the garden tools and the the garden tools, the pollen, the bug spray. Everything's just arranged like a true professional. Master class here.
Thank you. Yeah, you got to have a solid foundation for any underdeck area as well as for any podcast and any sports team. And right now we got all of that going all over the city, Graham.
Yes.
So I'm excited to jump into this episode. It's going to be a big episode.
Yeah, we got a ton to talk about today. We've got the Braves, who are starting their season on Thursday. We got the Hawks, who are still in the midst of their brutal West Coast road trip and have had a lot of ups and downs recently that we will get into. And we have the Falcons making moves in free agency, including bringing home one of Atlanta's own, Mike Davis, not affiliated with the podcast, but he is from Atlanta, the former Carolina Panthers running back. We had a pretty decent season filling in for Christian McCaffrey, who sunk my fantasy season because he only played in two damn games last year.
Mike Davis, this is?
Mike Davis, yeah.
Sure. Well, I don't think...
Christian McCaffrey screwed me.
Yeah, I don't think Davis screwed you.
No, McCaffrey did. I couldn't pick him up, unfortunately. I wish I could have, but someone else was faster to the trigger than I was.
Man, I'm so sorry to hear that, Graham, and I was not expecting your fantasy football team to be the first thing we're discussing on this exciting podcast.
No, it's the last thing we should talk about, probably.
I'm glad we are.
We also want to address the elephant in the room. Everybody knows this. That's been listening this year. We've had some issues with Adam's microphone going buzz, and we apologize profusely. We've been called out on it multiple times. It's not our intention. We thought we got over it. It happened again in the last episode. We did an audio test. We actually sat down here for about 15 minutes and recorded just us bantering back and forth, and we listened to playback. We think we fixed the issue. And so this is something you probably don't have to worry about. And, and we want to thank also user Nick Rising, who's been with us since the beginning, for contacting us last week and saying basically what the fuck is going on. And sorry, Nick. He did it a very nice way. He didn't say it like that. But we're back, baby.
Yeah, it was an embarrassment. And if anyone cares, I don't think it was the mic. It was the computer. And there's a lot of ins and outs to this audio engineering world that I'm not attuned to yet. So that's why I generally need Graham with me to do the tech stuff. So that's why I push for an in-person, because we can't have that crap anymore.
No, it's unacceptable.
We're better than that.
Yeah.
Like, that should be the content can be crap, but it should at least sound halfway decent if we've been doing this for 4 years.
Sure.
As in, like, clear. So, let's... We'll keep the bar there for the rest of the year and try to go above and beyond.
Yeah, and instead we have the ambiance of outdoor podcasting that we've dabbled in over the last 4 years every now and then, just for your listening pleasure or displeasure, depending on, your mileage may vary there. But it was worth it to be in person. So I think let's get on with the show and talk about your Atlanta Braves, the defending... What, three years in a row now we've won the NL East? What is this, 1997? Braves are coming off a hell of a season where they went the deepest in the postseason that they've done since 2001, getting to the NLCS, taking a 3-1 lead against the Dodgers. We know how that ended, unfortunately. But at the same time, it wasn't one of those seasons where it's like, oh, man, that was our best shot. We're never going to get back again. we're screwed. This team is old. You're not saying that when you got Mike Soroka coming back. Max Fried, Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies, Freddie Freeman, the defending MVP. So it sets up to be a very exciting season, Adam, in the NL East. The NL East is revitalized, I would say. I say every team has a shot at winning the division. You might disagree with that, but the Mets are definitely a new threat. The Nationals are always the Nationals. And we know the Braves are good. The Marlins are scrappy as hell. They got into the playoffs last year, even though it was an expanded playoff format. But they have some good young pitching. So this is going to be a really, really cool season, I think, this year. I think I'm really just fascinated about the dynamics of the division, but I'm more interested in the dynamics of this final roster we got heading out of spring training, and it's likely to change as time goes on. But the Braves opened up with pretty much zero power on the bench and five left-handers in a 10-man bullpen. And your main two bench guys are Pablo Sandoval, a.k.a. the Kung Fu Panda, the 2012 World Series Most Valuable Player, and Ahire Adriazana, who we've talked about. Both these guys had outstanding springs and earned their spots on the roster.
Yeah, if we're starting with the bench, it was, well, you know, the bench and bullpen were really the only battles that were out there. And I don't think anyone going into this pictured Pablo Sandoval. Is it Adrianza?
Could be Adrianza. We'll get it at some point.
The problem is I'm reading it off of my little sheet of paper, and I just guessed on the spelling. So what I
spelled like Adrian and then Za.
Yeah, so Adrianza.
Yeah, it's probably Adrianza.
Alex Jackson is our backup catcher, and then everyone's favorite Ender Inciarte. So it certainly is a weak bench, and I mean Pablo got there because he actually hit pretty well in spring training. I think he was hovering around 400, I believe.
He hit 429, the 978 OPS. However, he's not hitting for power, really. 12 of those hits are singles, and then the other three were doubles. But he's not that far removed from at least a good power season. In 2019, he had 14 homers and a .507 slugging percentage and 296 plate appearances. So that's not terrible, and that's only, you know, 2 years ago. So it's not to say he can't provide power. It's just in his most recent output, you know, in the COVID season, which he didn't really play. One game, and then he played a little bit of the NLCS. And spring training, he hasn't really been hitting for power. But that's not to say he can't still crank out a home run or two.
And he's on this team because he grinds good at-bats together. As we remember with his first at-bat in the playoffs last year, where he comes in and, well, he got hit.
He got
that.
Hit. I think he saw three pitches. It was 2-1
count. He
looked
solid. Like, he's not scared. He's a professional hitter. Snit is not a big fan of someone coming off the bench that's just going to strike out 7 times out of 10 and maybe run into a home run every now and then.
Yeah, he's very different from Bobby Cox in the sense that Bobby Cox would run out the same pinch hitter, it felt like, near the end of his career. Remember Corky Miller?
The, third string catcher?
Yeah, it was like he was always the pinch hitter for, it's like a solid 3 months, like the 2006 or 7 season, I can't remember. And it was like, this guy can't hit worth a shit. And it's great that Bobby believes in him, that's fantastic. And Corky's trying. He's doing his best. Everybody's doing their best and believing in each other. But you gotta get results at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, you always want to, it'd be nice to have that one veteran with power that could come up and hit a walk-off home run for you. But we don't have that. And it sucks so much, this whole DH thing, not going with the DH. And I know Charlie Morton was complaining about it this week, just about the fact that he's not in the major leagues to hit. Like, all he's doing is taking someone's job in the minors that could be up as a bench player or a just like a pinch hitter. And it sucks that these pitchers have to hit this year. And with this bench, a 4-man bench, we can't ride with this all year, because it's like you're going to be killing your starters. And we're going to be pinch hitting with Max Fried a lot, I guess.
No.
Like we used to do with Tehran.
No, remember, Max Fried used to pinch run, too.
You're going to have to do that now. No,
I don't want that, man.
Well, I don't want it either, but you have a four-man bench, and one of them's a catcher. So say one guy goes down and Ender's in the outfield. I mean, I guess Pablo's going to have to play some third. Austin Riley moves to left. It's going to be weird. So yeah. I think this is just for like a couple of weeks with this short of a bench.
Well, I know also that in a surprising move that a lot of people, I don't think, at least for me, I can't speak for a lot of people, but I can speak for myself, I did not see coming, was Bryce Wilson being optioned down to AAA to start the season. Now, they've said that's not going to be how it works. He's going to be the fifth starter. They just don't need him yet, and he has an option, so fuck it, right? Fulfill another need, add an extra bullpen arm or whatever. But it's weird the way the Braves are handling these options to me. We also look at a guy like Contreras, or William Contreras, who had a much better spring, who profiles to potentially be a major league caliber catcher, who's also going to be spending time in AAA. And the reasoning for that seems to be that they want him to develop more and get everyday at-bats, everyday action, and that they think he will be a better player in the long run for that. So I can understand that, but you can't tell me what we've seen from Alex Jackson in his brief time up here from a defensive or offensive standpoint. He's going to give you anything in those starts.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's got a little bit of pop. He hit a opposite field home run the other day. But, I mean, he's a defensive catcher. I don't think anyone's very excited about it. But I buy the get Williams Contreras more at-bats. But also, the AAA season doesn't start until May. So he's just going to be playing in those, like, inter-squad games for the next month. So I certainly would have been a lot more excited to see Contreras and – you know, it goes back, I can't remember the last year we didn't have two decent veteran catchers, like either Flowers or Suzuki, and we did that for a reason, is that these guys can't catch every day in Atlanta summer heat. Like, that's the other thing. This is a 160-game season again. It's not the 60-game sprint that last year was.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, not Luke Jackson. Well, he doesn't excite me either, but Alex Jackson – as well, that was surprising, but I understand the logic. And you know, Contreras didn't play in the minors at all last year, so
right.
I mean, let him get every day at bats. But if you run into a situation where Darnold is, heaven forbid, injured for a little while, you know, Contreras would be the guy to be called up to be the everyday guy,
right?
Versus Alex Jackson,
right? And I think so. Another thing to consider, you talked about his lack of minor league experience last year. He's only played 16 games above Class A level and none at AAA. Yeah, so Jackson's only hit 4 for 27 this spring. He's only come up for a cup of coffee in the majors over the past 2 years, but he's 2 for 20 with no homers, 9 strikeouts. But yeah, as you mentioned, he does have pop. He had 28 homers in 2019. So, I mean, that was in AAA. So,
plus defender, though.
Supposedly. I haven't seen enough of him to really gauge him defensively yet. We also haven't seen enough to really gauge him offensively, but the offense is going to stick a little more with you. I just wonder how long-term this is going to work out. Like, if Contreras really does start kicking ass, why not insert him as the backup? Like, if he gets that development, even if it's only for 3 months, let's say, like, July or something, it's like, okay, you know, there's nothing else for this guy to prove at the AAA level, let's call him up. Like, if he gives you a better chance to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably depends on where the team's at the time. Like, if we're kicking ass in first place, keep him down there. But if we need a little extra shot in the arm, then
yeah,
maybe that's an option.
I would still say, even if you are in first place and you're doing well, but let's say Jackson's just not doing so hot, I would still consider potentially calling up Contreras.
I will say this. I do like running with the young guys versus, I saw today, we signed a 38-year-old Jeff Mathis.
Yes.
To a minor league contract. That does not excite me at all. I don't want a 38-year-old backup catcher. I'd rather, like, let's finally see what Alex Jackson has, if anything, or give the job to Contreras. But right. I don't need these Corky Millers coming back, Graham. Like, I prefer Flowers Miller over 38-year-old Jeff Mathis. Like, I don't think Flowers has signed with anyone, has he?
I don't think so either. I haven't heard anything about Flowers signing with anybody. Which you is, know what? You better slow your roll on one Jeff Mathis here, Adam. You
what
know
did what? He do last year?
He had 161 with a 221 on base percentage last year for the Rangers. I don't want to hear your slander. Yeah, I mean, he's a career backup guy. He's been playing since 2005, mostly on the West Coast, which is why we don't know a lot about him. Started his career with the Angels, bopped around to the I remember him when he played with the Marlins for a little bit. Then he went back out west to Arizona and Texas. So, yeah, he's never been a good hitter. But he was worth 0.4 WAR last year, which is
defensively
speaks to his proficiency as a defender, because he ain't getting that with hitting 161 with three home runs. So, but he's also a career 0.4 WAR player, so it's not like he's God's gift to man defensively either. So I think this is just a depth move in case both the young guys can't do their job. You can say, okay, bring in Jeff Mathis just to run the ship from a defensive standpoint.
If you were going to do that, though, I mean, I can't believe we're spending this much on now our third string catcher, basically. Tyler Flowers is still out there. I'm looking at it right now, and he's 35, and defensively, and, like, I mean, he's like God's gift to pitch framing or whatever.
Right.
So you would think that would be a better look, someone that has been with the organization for so long.
Probably just don't have those funds, man. Liberty Media / COVID.
We could afford the veteran minimum, you would think.
Well, you would think.
What do I know, though? We couldn't afford what I was going to say, going back to talking about like the rest of our bench. God, how much better do you feel if Adam Duvall is on this team right now as a fourth outfielder / that pinch hitter? You know, I mean,
yeah,
the power bat off the bench and just his late inning defense. It sucks that we couldn't. I think he was $5 million, which sucks that we couldn't afford that to have the backup. And then we're paying Ender $8 million, so that's what's kind of screwing us there.
You're stuck with Ender. That's a problem. Even if you release Ender, you still got to pay him that money. So, because the baseball union is the best union in the world. It is frustrating from that standpoint. And you got to wonder about Adriazana, too. Even though he's had an outstanding spring, plays good defense. It's like, let's say Dansby got hurt the other day. And it's not supposed to be a big injury. I can't remember what happened to him. I think it was a leg thing. But, you know, if Dansby can't play for a little bit, for whatever reason, or Ozzie goes down, or whatever. But, you know, you look at what Adriazana does offensively, it's not like he sets the world on fire. He had a good year in 2019, hitting .272, .349, .416 slugging. He's not great, but he's not a guy that hits a lot of homers. And he's just had a little bit of an up and down career. 2020, he didn't play well at all. Hit under 200, under 300 on base. No home runs. So you just wonder what you're going to get with him offensively. Obviously, he looks great in spring training, but we know spring training can be misleading. The track record says he's an okay hitter, if that. Probably below average overall, with one very good season. But it's not like he's a guy that draws a lot of walks. You rely on him to play defense. And you're relying, I think, more on Sandoval to supply the offense from the bench. I don't know. The bench is definitely a weak spot of this ball club.
Yeah, there's that. But, I mean, I was glad to see that we did re-sign. We released Jason Kipnis.
And Jake Lamb.
But we got Kipnis back.
Oh, we did.
He signed a minor league deal. So okay. I feel good about that. He's, you know, a veteran guy, played a ton of years with the Indians, could come in and play. I don't know if he plays anything but second base, though. I'm sure he can play a little third.
Yeah, I think he's played
a little outfield, maybe.
He's played some short, but he hasn't done that in a while, I don't think.
So I feel good having Kipnis down there. We still have Camargo. But yeah, the Jake Lamb one really surprised me. As I know I said about 3 weeks on this very podcast, that I was excited about him and thought he was going to be a force coming off the bench and spending some time at third base with Austin Riley, and then he gets cut. I mean, it was a factor of Sandoval and Adrianza just hitting out of their minds in spring training, but we all know that doesn't always transfer to the regular season, but, you know, they earned a job. Good on them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they definitely earned it, and Snicker was saying, you know, pretty much effusive praise for both Adrianza.
God, we'll get better.
I'm going to struggle with that name for a while. Adrianza and Sandoval. and that there was no way you couldn't give them these spots based on their performance. It's like, out of all the times where we talk about how spring training stats don't matter, they matter a hell of a lot for guys like that. And they delivered. So, you know, let's see what they do in the regular season.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this bullpen. We got Will Smith, who we knew is probably going to be the closer. Tyler Matzek, beast. Mentor was a beast last year. Grant Dayton, who's been solid. And your boy Newcomb made it at him.
That was a surprising one.
All of those guys I just mentioned are left-handers. Now for the right-handers, we got Chris Martin, obviously. Josh Tomlin, we figured. For some reason, Luke Jackson. Your boy Huascar Ulloa. And Nate Jones, who was a latecomer, who I think filled in admirably for Carl Edwards Jr., because he left on his own volition.
Yeah, I thought both Nate Jones and Carl Edwards Jr. were going to make it based off their spring performances, but they went with Jones over Edwards, and, you know, this is a guy who was a beast with the White Sox a few years ago and injury-plagued, and he's been as solid as they come this spring and showed that he's healthy and could be, you know, like our next Tyler Matzek find.
It could be, but the interesting thing about Edwards Jr. was that he opted out of his contract. He thought he pitched so well in spring training he could get a bigger deal.
Well, I think there was a piece in his contract where the Braves had to tell him by a certain date whether or not he was going to make the team. Mm. And it was that date, so I guess they told him he wasn't going to make
it. Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So he had the option to opt out
or
take a minor league deal, and he didn't want to do that.
So, I mean, I haven't kept up with Luke Jackson at all this spring, just because anytime I see his name, I just ignore. Do we know how well he did this spring?
I heard he had a pretty good spring.
Okay.
And he was good in 2019.
Until he wasn't.
As frustrating as he was. But, like, he's one of those guys. So the line that the Braves are taking and are very open with is that they sent guys down that have options, even though they know they are better current major league options. Because
that's the thing that frustrates
me. It's a long season.
Do you really give a shit if Luke Jackson goes somewhere else?
I mean, if he turns out to be a stud.
He's not going to, though. There's nothing in his track record other than the 2 month span where he was actually pretty lights out that suggests that. He wasn't even on the fucking playoff roster last year.
He has a plus slider, and apparently that's worth holding on to.
Whereas we have Jacob Webb, who got optioned, who pitched his ass off. He's pitched his ass off both years he's been with the Braves. It was a career 1.39 ERA and 36 appearances. And, you know, I'm sure there's other things to Jacob Webb. I know he has minor league options, but it's like that guy gives you a better chance to win than Luke Jackson right now.
Right now, but, I mean, it's like they were open about it. It's a long season, and there's going to be injuries, and you'd rather be able to call Jacob Webb up in 2 weeks when someone either underperforms or gets hurt.
I'd rather have Jacob Webb there now to provide quality innings. Didn't give up a single run last year. 8 appearances, lights out.
Yeah, he's a beast, but, like, I mean, Grant Dayton, you cut him, he's getting picked up immediately.
Well, I'm not talking about Grant Dayton. I'm talking about Luke Jackson. Luke Jackson does not need to be here.
Well, let's see what he does. Maybe he's on a short leash.
But would you agree that Luke Jackson doesn't need to be here?
I think Luke Jackson, for that 2 month stretch, he saved our ass from the bullpen. And
yes.
I think he got a lot of goodwill from that.
In 2019.
He was, like, our only good arm.
He wasn't on the roster in 2020 for much of the year.
Yeah, it was also a 60-season weird schedule.
Don't care. Jacob Webb.
You act like 2019, it's like we're talking about with the Braves re-signed Peter Moylan.
But don't you remember how bad Luke Jackson was down the stretch?
Yeah.
And how for some reason Snicker kept going with him, even in the postseason?
Yeah, we didn't have many other options.
You had anybody else except Luke Jackson. He was a home run machine. I don't expect him to suddenly figure it all out again. Although I said the same thing about Mentor, and Mentor proved me wrong, so maybe Luke Jackson will shove it down my throat and rip off my face.
Right.
I hope he does. But I'm just saying, on paper, Jacob Webb is better. He should be on the team. It's bullshit. I don't fuck your options. I don't care.
It's just the way baseball is, though. You got to take advantage. Like
you're putting yourself at a disadvantage right now to win games by putting Luke Jackson out there if he makes appearances in actual high leverage situations.
You understand the concept of needing as many arms as you can get, though, right?
Yes, and I assume Luke Jackson's out of options. I'm fine with him just going somewhere else. I've seen enough of him.
Well, obviously the Braves and their analytics department and all the coaches disagree.
That's fine.
With you.
It's the wrong decision. It's the wrong decision. Jacob Webb is the right decision. He's proven himself time and time again. Over 44 career appearances, he has proven to be an extremely efficient pitcher.
You said 36 last time.
Sorry, 36 appearances in 2019, 8 appearances in 2020 equals 44.
Yeah, no, he has a 106 ERA in 44 appearances. He's a beast.
All right, whatever. That's even better than what I
said. Yeah, no one is saying that Jacob Webb is not better than Luke Jackson. No one's saying that.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's just I hate the idea of all this option stuff. It just drives me crazy. I understand it. I don't like the attitude, though. I get it from a strategy standpoint. Someone gets hurt, you can plug in some guy, and that's fine. But I wish there were just other guys that you could plug in. Other guys could take that role other than Webb, because I think Webb would serve us really well as one of our bullpen options. So.
Yeah, I mean, it does suck that he'd probably be our fourth best arm.
Yeah.
Going
or even
it.
Like,
but, I mean,
I like Hoskar Ynoa, but he's better than Ynoa.
Well, Ynoa, apparently we're doing like a bullpen game. And
right, the game that would be the fifth starter is going to be a bullpen
so
game.
That's what Noah's up for. So maybe Jacob Webb gets that call after Ynoa pitches.
Maybe.
Like,
and maybe
three
this,
or four
all this bitching's for it probably right. is for nothing.
Yeah.
And I've read Snitker talking a lot about in spring training how they are going beyond a five-man rotation in the sense that people are going to get time off to rest and rejuvenate, especially the young guys like Fried, Soroka, Anderson. Just because, especially with Anderson, I mean, he's going to be a big wild card for me this year. We knew how good he was last season. Can he make the adjustments? Because baseball has tape on him. They've been watching it. Can he make the adjustments and still be a formidable pitcher in the big leagues? I think he can, but that's yet to be seen. But the point is that they're going to be resting these guys a lot. So we're going to see Ynoa. We're going to see Webb probably start a game. Yeah, you know, we're going to see
Webb.
We could see Webb starting.
Webb's not going to start a damn game. He's at the end of the bullpen guy.
Who the hell knows? I'm just saying. You're going to.
I would think before Jacob Webb, you're going with Bryce Wilson, Kyle
of
Wright,
Bryce
Ynoa.
Wilson. All right, fine. Sorry.
You're way off base here, Graham.
We're going to have probably a 9 to 10 man rotation this year. That's not going to be used conventionally. It's not like everybody's. We're going to go through all 10 guys and then back to the beginning. But people are going to take rests. And they're going to skip a start. They might skip two starts. And in that time period, different guys are going to be shuffled in here to fill those roles. So everybody's going to get a chance, which I'm fine with, particularly when you're trying to monitor innings limits. I mean, we saw last year Max Fried, that time's going to get a little worn down, even in a shortened season. So even though he had a brilliant year. So I'm fine with this approach. And I also think that our rotation is a million times better than it was last year. Last year was garbage, and we honestly got really lucky with Anderson playing pitching as well as he did. And it was another area where Alex Anthopoulos went out and filled some holes. Charlie Morton, I'm expecting to have a big season. I don't think he's going to be 2015 Charlie Morton, but he pitched his ass off last year with the Rays in the World Series in the postseason. And as long as he can stay healthy, he's going to provide us, I think, with not an ace, because I don't think it's going to be his role, but a stable third option. I would say the third guy out of the rotation in terms of what you're looking for. Like, if your postseason rotation is Soroka, Fried, Morton, bring it on.
It's ridiculous. And Smiley, he's going to be fine. Everyone kind of freaked out after he got hit really hard in his first start. But, I mean, he ends the spring with a 3.29 ERA. So it's huge to have those two veterans tacked on with these young guys.
Yeah.
I mean, last year was also just so weird with, like, spring training getting shut down, and then, like, when the season actually started, these starters weren't stretched out at all, and that's why, like, we were saved by having such a deep bullpen.
Yes.
Whereas now, I mean, they're ready to go in 2 days pitching 6-7 innings from the get-go, where that wasn't the case in August, and we needed that ridiculous bullpen depth. So even though on paper this bullpen doesn't look as strong – as it did last year,
I think it still looks pretty good.
It still looks pretty good.
You're talking about Smith, Matzik, Minter, who we know are all beasts. Dayton's been good. Chris Martin's a beast. Those are five guys you can throw at the back end of a game and feel pretty fucking confident about.
Yeah, and I'm excited that they're giving Newcomb, like, this is Newcomb's last chance.
Yes.
He was so good for us in 2019 coming out of the pen, and he just had a different demeanor about him that year, and I'm hoping just he's going to – I know he still wants to be a starter. There's an article out about him still wanting to be a starter, but he doesn't have that opportunity right now, so he needs to embrace this because, I mean, even if he's not with the Braves forever, like, this is his chance to prove that he's worth giving an opportunity, and he could be a weapon down there. So there's a lot of potential down there. Your boy Luke Jackson, he could be awesome. You never know. Big slider.
He'll be hard throwing. I'll make you a bet right now. He's done by July, either in AAA or if he doesn't have any options, he's off the roster.
July?
Yeah.
April? That's pretty late.
By July, it could happen beforehand. I'm saying July is.
Oh,
the
July
deadline.
1st?
No, end of July is the deadline.
Oh no, that's too late. Beginning of July, you got yourself a deal.
Okay, fine.
Okay,
$5 bet.
Deal.
Okay.
That's exciting.
That's exciting. So to talk about your boy Newcomb. In four Grapefruit League games since March 17th, he's looked really good. He's only allowed three hits. He hasn't walked anybody, and he struck out seven and hasn't given up a run, five scoreless innings. So he looks good and ready to go. Yeah, I agree with that. I think Newcomb could be a sneaky good reliever for us. I mean, if he can find his 2019 stuff as a reliever, that just deepens your bullpen. If we can match the depth of the bullpen last year with hopefully good depth in the rotation this year, and people can stay mostly healthy, you know, no Soroka season-ending injury kind of things, we will have, I think, overall the best pitching staff. Now, I'm not saying rotation or bullpen, but collective as a unit, the best staff in the East.
We're deeper than anyone else.
Yeah,
like, everyone talks about their, like, we have potential aces that are just as good as anyone else can run out there. But
I don't know if anyone's as good as DeGrom or Scherzer, but I know what you mean.
Scherzer's aging. We've always hit the hell out of Scherzer.
Sure.
Like,
but still, Scherzer's still a beast.
He is a beast.
And DeGrom's the best in the game.
But no one else is running out, you know, potentially Ian Anderson as their fourth starter.
Right.
Who could, like, he could be an ace at some point. Like, I mean, and we'll see what, like, if Bryce Wilson or Smiley is at number five, come on. I mean, that's where you get separation when you're in these, when you're going up against other people's number four, number five, and we've just got a solid, proven starter going against them.
Yeah. And I really hope Bryce Wilson is the guy to take over. Pitched so well last year in that NLCS game. Minter also, man. I thought he was done. That, because he spot started in the NLCS and threw those three innings in Game 5.
Yeah.
That was the performance of, along with Wilson, those two guys gave the performance of a lifetime.
What do you have, like seven strikeouts in those
three
innings?
Three innings. Something ridiculous. Against the best lineup maybe ever.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that with hyperbole. That is one of the toughest, out of all my 30 years of watching baseball. Well, I've been watching baseball since I was zero, but I mean, like, when I could actually watch baseball, I guess since 95, I have never seen a lineup that is that good ever. It's fantastic.
Yeah, like eight potential All-Stars.
Yeah. So maybe in the last 30 years, one of the best lineups ever. Bottom line is he destroyed them. So I know that was a freak situation with him starting, but he was good the whole year as a bullpen guy. I expect him to take the next step. We could be looking at potentially Minter. I could see him becoming the closer. I'm not saying that will happen. Will Smith should have that on lockdown, but if something happens and he falters like he did at the beginning of last season, and Minter keeps pitching his lights out as he did, who's to say that Minter will not be the future star of the Braves even after Smith is gone?
Yeah, I mean, Smith last year, he was coming off COVID. Like, he never really got going until the end of the year, so he sure seems ramped up, ready to go. I'd be very surprised if he lets go of that closer job. But, yeah, A.J. Minter's got the stuff.
Yeah, like, or if Smith goes down for something.
Right.
Yeah. Or for some reason.
Oh, I mean, Chris Martin, too, man.
Right.
Like,
that's what I love about this bullpen. Depth everywhere. And one of your best bullpen pieces is in the minor leagues with Jacob Webb, so.
Yeah, and everyone squawks about Melanson, and the analytics don't match up for Melanson in terms of his, like, batting average, ball in play, and shit like that.
His FIP is also a little high. And you have to consider, too, he is not a Craig Kimbrell type pitcher where he throws it, you know, I'm talking about old school Kimbrell, where he throws it by with, you know, 98, 99, 100 miles an hour or plus that. He was a pitch to contact closer. Eventually that's going to catch up with you.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised if it started to catch up with him more and we see it go beyond the analytics in terms of, oh, he got a little lucky last season. We could see him actually blow up a little bit in San Diego. I'm not saying it's going to happen. He probably still will have a good season. But the older he gets, because of his decrease in velocity and just the way he pitches, his strategy, it was probably, you could say it's probably the right move not to bring him back, especially when you got so much in-house talent already.
So did you hear about Kirby Yates?
Who, we were trying to sign him, apparently.
Yes, we were going to. We put him through a physical. We're going to give him about $9 million to be at the back of our bullpen this year and kind of take Melanson's spot. And then he failed a physical. We tried to get him to come to a lower deal money-wise, and he walked away and went to the Blue Jays, and now he's out for the season with Tommy John surgery. So it just shows that you never know what's going on behind the scenes. It's like Anthopoulos realized, yeah, it'd be good to get another bullpen arm in here.
Mm-hmm.
And they were obviously trying to do that, but they were smart and didn't, you know, just throw money at a guy that wasn't healthy.
Right.
So I like hearing things like that coming out like 3-4 months later. It's like that's just how quiet this front office is.
Yeah, it's a tight, it's a very tight ship. You don't hear about anything,
really, right?
Which is good. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Just talk about the offense a little bit. We know what we're getting offensively from this team, I think, from the most part. We know that Ronald Acuña Jr. is a beast. We know he strikes out a lot. But there's been a lot of talk about how Acuña is in the best shape of his life. He's making more contact in spring training. And that he is locked and loaded and 100% healthy. The wrist is good. And I really want him to be healthy going into the playoffs if we make the playoffs this year. I just think I thought about this quite a bit, how we would have, especially because we were beating the Dodgers with a mostly ineffective Acuña. I know he got on base a few times and had, I think he had like a double or two, but he wasn't effective offensively and everybody knew it. And yeah, the wrist was bothering him. He never made excuses about it, but that's, you know, that's what was going on. If he was just healthy, we could have definitely been, we could have been in Dodgers even if he wasn't, but we would have had an even better chance. This is the season for Acuña to win MVP or have an MVP-like season. I don't even care about the 40 home runs, 40 steals. I don't care about that. I care about him going out there and making game-changing plays, game-changing at-bats, limiting the strikeouts, and reaching it. I don't think he's reached the zenith yet, and we've seen how good he can be. Acuña is the key. If he can stay healthy and have the kind of season he is capable of, then we are in a really good position to challenge the Dodgers for the World Series. But he's got to take that next step. He's almost, I mean, he is pretty much a superstar, but he's got to be an MVP caliber superstar. He's got to have this kind of season Freddie did last year on crack for a full season and just kill it. If that happens and everybody else produces, I expect Ozzie to produce like he always has, Freddie to produce, Ozuna to produce, and Darno to produce. If everybody produces the way we know they can, and Acuña takes the MVP step, we can beat the Dodgers. If the pitching, the bullpen is all good too, but Acuña to me is the key in terms of offensive production, because there were so many at-bats last year we were facing those guys where it's like he couldn't come through. And
yeah,
you knew it was the wrist.
He had so
many
chances to do it.
You knew it was the wrist. And we saw in the 2019 playoffs, he was the only guy getting on base. He was the difference maker, but everyone else sucked.
Yeah.
So it's like everyone,
minus like Dansby.
Yeah, right.
Oddly enough.
So if Acuña takes that next step and everybody produces the way they did last year or close to it in the ballpark, no pun intended, we can beat those fuckers.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's only 23 years old.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like. He's been with us forever, but like he's still, a lot of 23-year-olds are still in the minors trying to figure their shit out, and this is what, his third full season now?
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah, full season, yes.
Between him, I expect a big step from Ozzie this year, because last year he was hurt. He also had the wrist issues last year.
Yeah, but he was healthy come
He was healthy come the playoffs, yeah. But like him hitting number, he's probably going to be hitting number two this year to start off. We got Acuña, Ozzie, Freddie, Ozuna.
Yeah.
That's as good as it gets 1-4. And mm-hmm. we don't have to spend $400 million to get that done. Like, we have something special in place. And those guys are hungry as hell. Like, as hungry as we are, as these two dudes podcasting under a deck that have been watching sports together since we were freaking 6 years old together, getting to, what, a couple innings away from
going to the World Series.
Going to the World Series, and knowing that we would have stomped the Rays had gotten there. Like, that was the World Series, us versus the Dodgers.
Yeah, yeah.
So knowing how hungry we are, just getting jacked up talking about this here at the end of March in 2021, like, you can't imagine what those guys are feeling right now.
Oh, they're rabid.
And they know that they got it, and they see the front office go and get a guy who has been one of the best postseason pitchers of all time.
Charlie Morton.
And Charlie Morton.
Yeah.
You've got a potential one of the best closers in the league in Will Smith if he does what he did in 2019. Like, the pieces are there. MVP at best for first baseman in the league. Like, that's a fact at this point.
Yeah, and all of baseball. All of baseball, he's the best.
Yeah. Like, and then, you know, I mean, so it's going to depend on what does Austin Riley do? What does Kristen Pache do?
Yeah.
If both of them can just be league average or a little better hitters, we're in business.
Especially Riley. Like, if Pache has a season where he hits, like, 203 or something, whatever. If he's playing the lights out deep. I mean, he keeps making plays defensively. He's had so many assists this season, or this spring training, just gunning guys out. He made another huge assist against the Orioles on Saturday night where he gunned a guy, I think, from third when he was playing right field. I mean, the dude's a freak. We know he's a freak defensively. He's proven it time and time again. And I expect that to translate to a full season. But you're right. If Austin Riley can find some consistency, and then that guy's hitting sixth or seventh in your lineup, look out, man.
Yeah. And he's had a pretty good spring.
Yeah.
Hit those two bombs. Like, did you see those bombs in that one game that, like, went over the center field batter's eye?
Yeah. And they said it was 445 feet. I bet it was 470. Yeah. And it was like,
I mean, that power, you saw it.
Yeah. It was hilarious. The Pirates, the Pirates PA guy is like, that was a grown man home run. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, he can do that. And the good news about, I mean, Pache's defense is obviously, like, best in the world. But, you know, Austin Riley was a very good defensive third baseman as well.
And that's something
that's what's great. We're not losing anything there.
No, and that's something that I think that is lost sometimes when people talk about Atlanta, is that we have a great defense. No matter if you look at an errors or the metrics. We know Ozuna is going to have some fun out there in left field.
That's one hole, though.
Right.
You know?
But everybody else, you look at it, it's like Darno's a good defender. Our pitchers are decent defenders. Freddie is a great defender. Ozzie's world class. Dansby's world class. Acuna's world class. Pache is supposed to be world class. And Austin Riley is well above average as a third baseman. I don't think he's Nolan Arenado, but he could, you know, I want to see him this year take that. He could. And that's the exciting thing about this team, is they're just continuing to get better. I mean, hell, even Freddie Freeman had the best season of his life last year at age 30. I mean, Jesus Christ. He's not going to have a rapid decline. Everybody talking shit about him having a subpar spring training, you need to just shove it. Shove it right up your butt, because I don't want to hear that, man. Freddie Freeman is the heart and soul of this team. He is the biggest reason, probably, why we came so close to beating those stupid Dodgers. And because he's had a bad spring training, people are like, what's wrong with Freddie? Freddie could not get a single hit in the entirety of spring training. It's like Julio Jones in training camp or preseason. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. You know he's going
to
show up.
Yeah, and he started to show some stuff. I know he had a home run, I think, this week in one of the games. He also talked about he just had twins, and he was like, he's missing his family right now. Once he gets back home, he'll be fine. He'll be able to be with them. He'll be in a good headspace. And, Freddie's just the beast. And, yeah. So, anyways, the defense is great. The offense should be great. The pitching should be great. The bullpen should be great. There's no reason why we can't win this division a fourth time in a row and challenge the Dodgers again for the World Series. I don't give a shit about the Padres. The Mets, you know what? They got a lot of holes. I know
they
do. everybody's saying the Mets are the creme de la creme, and they're projected to win like 130 games or whatever from all these pundits. But But let's look at this, right? So we know Frankie Lindor is a beast. He's probably the best shortstop in baseball, despite not having the best season last year. But we know overall, guy's just a freak. But you got questions in their rotation. They're missing Noah Syndergaard. They're missing Carlos Carrasco. They're missing Seth Lugo out of the bullpen. So they're missing guys. Edwin Diaz, who they blew all that money on, the old Mariners closer.
Yeah, he kind of closed out.
He did well at the end of last year in September, 0.77 ERA in 11 appearances, but he lost his job during the season. So what kind of season is he going to have?
I mean,
we don't know about, what's his name, Pete Alonso. Even though he hit 16 home runs last year, he just didn't quite have the impact he had his rookie season, where he was hitting like 50 bombs and was just unstoppable and couldn't get him out. So I think the Mets have, even though I know on paper they've gotten better, I think they have a lot more questions than we have, honestly.
Our only question is our bench, basically.
Yeah, our bench is our weakest part, and if that's the case, so be it. Would you rather have the best bench in the world or have a shitty bullpen, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not scared of any of these teams right now until they prove that they can do it.
Yeah, I'm scared of the Dodgers. I always am. Well, that's especially getting especially getting Bauer.
And what's going to be tough for me is just like, because you're right, even if I'm not convinced any of these teams can beat us yet, because it's solid 1-5 in the NL East, we're going to beat up on each other.
So yeah.
You don't have the Marlins being the cellar dwellers that we're used to, where you can just sweep every series against them.
Yeah.
See, if anything, like I'm more scared about the Marlins than any other team in this division.
They're sneaky good, man.
They're young, they're hungry, and
Sixto Sanchez, Sandy Alcantara are both really good pitchers.
I don't know, they just have more. I respect a team that doesn't have to spend the money to be competitive, and like they meld better together. Like the Mets just throwing money at all these free agents and thinking that creates a team. That doesn't create a team. Like, there's more chemistry with the Marlins than with any of these other teams in the East.
Right.
Besides us.
Yeah, and we saw that chemistry carry the Marlins when they have talent, especially in their pitching staff, but we saw the Marlins go into Wrigley and take out the Cubs.
Yeah.
No problem. Swept them.
So they've got a little experience there as well.
Yeah, and in the playoffs last year. So, and you can say it was a bastardized playoff, whatever, who cares? They went on the road and beat a bunch of guys who won the World Series like 5 years ago. Yeah. So they are I think I'm not afraid of them over the long haul, like in terms of this season. But, I mean, you got to respect them. I think even the Phillies, you got to respect them a little bit. Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola for a full year. We know Harper is good. Gene Segura is solid.
McCutcheon's back.
McCutcheon's back, even though he's old as shit. It's going to be a competitive year in the NL East. The Nationals, we know we got our good friend Scherzer. I know Strasburg is a little banged up. But, they got Trey Turner. They got great pieces.
Corbin. Juan Soto.
Oh, yeah, we can forget Juan Soto. I mean, yeah, so no one can be underestimated here. Every whoever finishes last in this division probably doesn't suck.
The Phillies.
Oh, probably will be the Phillies. It's overpaid.
Sorry, losers. Philly John.
They also got Real Muto, so, I mean.
They avoided disaster by re-signing Real Muto. But
did they, though? It's funny how these teams, and that's the thing I always bitch about, not having the unlimited funds. But you look at how some teams spend their unlimited funds, like the Phillies. Haven't made the playoffs since they splurged all that money.
There's something to having to strategically put a roster together versus just, trying to fill a hole with whoever the top free agent is because you can afford them.
Well, I think the Dodgers have taken that approach and done it right. Like the Dodgers, but they've balanced it.
But it took them so many years.
But they've been competitive since 2013. They've been challenging for the World Series like every year. They go in the playoffs every year.
But they bring out their young guys as well.
Yeah, like they do a good job of balancing out. Yeah, guys like Bellinger and Kershaw's their homegrown. Bueller's their homegrown. May.
Like they've got a lot of.
But then they'll go out and get a Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
They'll go out and get a Trevor Bauer and, like, just seal the deal.
Oh, I can't believe they have Bauer.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I hate about going into this year is them having Bauer. That's just, they're going to win 120 games.
It gives you a little bit of a vibe, like, obviously the Hawks aren't on the same level. It's like, it doesn't matter who comes out of the East in the NBA because of the Nets and all right. the talent they have.
Right.
But like you said, we can beat the Dodgers. We show we can beat the Dodgers. But adding in Trevor Bauer, that's a bit of a – although we added Mike Soroka.
And Charlie Moore.
So, yeah. You know, we're better than we were last year.
True.
As well.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, is that the Dodgers were pretty much at full strength last year, and we were coming out with this ragtag rotation led by Max Fried and everybody else.
Kyle Wright pitched a game.
Yeah. Ian Anderson doesn't, you know, hardly had any hair on his face at that point.
Pitching game 7.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, if we're healthy, and they're healthy, it'll be a hell of a series. I mean, I'm thinking Braves, Dodgers, battle for the NLCS round 2. I don't really want to make a prediction from there. But I expect my expectation is you win the division again, you get back to the NLCS, and hopefully you can find a way to beat the Dodgers. That's the only – and hopefully you don't have to play the Dodgers in the NLDS. I really don't want to fucking deal with that.
Did you see what – I'm not going to do predictions. Did you see what SI did for their predictions, though?
No.
So they have the Braves beating the Cardinals –
Cardinals aren't doing shit.
And then
this year.
The Braves beating the Dodgers.
Oh, Jesus.
And then the Braves beating the Yankees. Which, like, come on.
That
like,
would be the sweetest.
Revenge tour. Throw the Mets in there in, like, a wild card game or something. It's just, like, could not get better than that.
That would be the sweetest revenge tour ever. Because you're talking about beating the team that beat you in the wild card game, the Chipper Jones last wild card game.
Yeah.
Talking about the team that beat you in 2019. And the Cardinals, you know, that franchise. Then beating the Dodgers, kicked our asses 3 times in the playoffs in the last, whatever, since 2013. And then beating the Yankees, who beat you in 2 World Series, the last 2 times you went to the World Series. That is, like, the biggest, like, 13-year-old me fantasy. Like, as a kid, I can just imagine if you're a kid, a grown-up Braves fan, being like, that is like reading a your favorite comic book or something. That's like, that just makes me so happy if that were to happen. I've said before, you could shoot me in the head the next day, I'd be okay with it if that happened. I'd be like, fine. Yeah. I experienced it, I saw it, I partied, great.
Just need that one night of party, you don't need that full year to enjoy it.
Yeah, it'll never get better.
Yeah, at that first night. Yeah.
So I'm not saying that I don't want anybody to come kill me, but I'm just saying, you know.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. Well, all in all, I don't know if you have anything else on the Braves, but that, besides talking about Luke Jackson, by far the most positive, well, any team preview we've ever done as far as your emotions and your optimism.
Now, here's the thing that people will point out who are superstitious who listen to this podcast. Every year with the Braves in the preview, I'm always like, yeah, maybe we'll get the wild card.
Right.
I've never been this bullish on the Braves since the show started. So I'm sure people, if the Braves implode, Soroka's arm falls off, Ozzie Albies' kneecaps explode, etc. Bad things happen. We'll blame me, who wasn't on the show.
I don't think that's fair. I think, if anything, it shows that you're just not like a bullish homer like me, that no matter what, I feel pretty good about the team.
Yeah.
Like, you've been honest over the years, and your honest assessment this year is that we have a good team. And there's no reason to not think we don't have a good team.
Well said. Yeah.
So, we didn't make any – that was SI making those predictions.
Right.
Not us.
Yeah.
So
– although I said we'll get to the NLCS at least is my prediction.
Fine. That's fine.
Yeah. God, whoever that Sports Illustrated person is must be a Braves fan.
Yeah.
That's like such a fantasy scenario.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
Oh, man.
All right, Graham. Well – I look forward to the start of the 2021 baseball season in a couple days. In the meantime, I think it's time to transition to our Atlanta Hawks segment. It's much more fun seeing that transition live because your eyes go kind of like bird crazy.
Oh, yeah, you got to get in character.
So good work there, as always, Mr. Hawk. So the Hawks, since we've last talked to you, the trade deadline came and went. And first, I guess let's talk about the trade that the Hawks did make versus the trade the Hawks didn't make. And we only made one deal, And I don't think there's anyone in the world that could be unhappy with this trade. We traded Rajon, was it $7 million Rondo?
Yeah.
Something like that, whatever his deal was. No, $14 million, $7 million each year, for Lou Williams of the Clippers. Lou Williams, who played for the Hawks back in like 2013.
Yeah.
Something along those
lines. 2011, I can't remember.
I remember meeting him when I worked for the Gwinnett Braves as an intern. And he was on the Hawks at that time. So that's 2013. So we traded Rondo and we got Lou Williams, 2 second-round picks, and cash. I don't understand what the Clippers were doing in this deal.
Well, I think a lot of it stems from Lou Williams is not in the rotation as much anymore. He's not what he was when he was winning the Sixth Man of the Year award every, like, 2 or 3 years. He's only averaging about 12 points a game, which is low for him. And his free throw rate has declined. And Lou, if you know anything about Lou Williams, you'll know that him getting the free throw line is a key to his success. And basically, if you don't know what free throw rate is, it's the number of free throws you take versus the number of field goals you attempt. So the higher your free throw rate, the more efficient you'll probably be. So 3 years ago, it was 42.6%. And that was almost a career high for him. Last year, it was 36.2%, which is still decent, but you know it's dropping. This year, it's only 27.7%. So his big thing is being able to draw contact and get to the line, and he's just not doing that anymore. He's not as effective as he used to be. He's still not a terrible player by any stretch of the imagination. He'll probably give us more than Rondo, even though he's not a pure point guard. But I think that the Clippers are banking on getting a backup point guard, someone who can vibe with Paul George, someone who can vibe with Kawhi Leonard, and be playoff Rondo. I think that's what they're banking on. And they don't really give a shit about giving us a little money and giving us a couple of draft picks. Although I think it is crazy how we were able to get those draft picks, you know, by trading Rondo.
Everything on paper, Lou Williams is the better player than Rondo.
Yeah, it's not to say that, but I'm just saying I think he fits their plan a little bit better than Lou Williams fit their plan.
Seems like I may have found the one guy that's not stoked about this trade.
I'm not – I think it's better for the Hawks. I'm just telling you why I think the Clippers made the deal, because I think Rondo fits their system better and they needed a backup point guard, whereas – even though we need a backup point guard, we need someone who wasn't Rondo who can also fill that leadership void. And apparently, I was wrong. I'll eat crow on this. I've read a lot of articles recently about how pivotal Lou Williams was in terms of developing guys. And to add more fuel to the void Pierce fire, a lot of people were apparently going to Rondo as well as the assistant coach, but going to Rondo with issues they had to take to Lloyd Pierce.
I heard that as well.
And also that Rondo was key in terms of breaking down film and being there for the guys. So even though Rondo may not have provided a lot on the court for whatever reason, injuries or just, I don't know, general decline, he was a big leader. So I'm hoping that Lou Williams can provide that leadership. And Lou Williams is also back in Atlanta. The place he loves the most is Magic City.
Sure.
So I know he's going to be going down there and getting those they named hot wings after him, Adam.
I'm aware. And I heard that. Well, I didn't hear that. I actually saw with my own eyes, Graham, that Buffalo Wild Wings.
I was about to say, did you go to the Magic City to get some Lou Williams Wild Wings?
No, but I got a little back. So,
not Wild Wings, but Hot Wings.
Well, the first part of the story, Buffalo Wild Wings tweeted at Lou Williams saying, hey, come get some wings here. And then Magic City responds saying, are y'all serious right now? Because you know if Lou Williams is in Atlanta, where he's getting his hot wings from.
Yeah.
Magic City.
Oh, totally.
So I don't know what Buffalo Wild Wings is trying to do.
Right. And you know what? I'm actually going to go to Magic City to get these wings.
Well, you can...
I read the story about how someone went... actually, the Hawks writer, Chris Kirshner on The Athletic, went to Magic City last year after the Lou Williams debacle and actually got wings there, and he said it was 100% worth it. And the food is amazing, apparently.
That's okay, so maybe you have to go there because I read... Then I started, like, reading. I went down a whole rabbit hole, like, reading reviews of Magic City wings.
Mm-hmm.
And some people were bashing them. Mm. But they got the delivered version, like the DoorDash.
Right. And it's never going to be as good that way.
Right, right. So maybe that could be a Atlanta's own
post-COVID vaccine.
Post-COVID vaccine group outing.
I think that sounds like a grand old time.
Just a couple blocks from State Farm Arena.
Yeah, and apparently there's no VIP room at the Magic City. So everyone's a VIP at Magic City.
That's good.
Yeah.
I don't know if we would have been seeking out that room.
No, I don't think we would. But yeah. That was just an interest. Like, it was great the way he broke down, like, the area. And
Kirshner said that.
Yeah. And he's like, there is no VIP room. And he's like, you know, it's pretty cool. You can just go there, eat wings, and, you know, get women dancing all around you. So it's like, sounds good to me.
Nice little restaurant.
Yeah.
So,
anyway.
Despite Lou having Magic City here, he also contemplated retiring, which is a little worrisome to me.
He's got a lot of miles on his legs,
but he's still only like 34. But I mean, it sounds like he loved LA and the team. And like, I was reading this from the Clippers' point of view, and they all said it sucked that they had to trade him. So I guess their offense has just been a lot of Paul George and Kawhi creating their own shots versus having a natural point guard like Rondo. So that's what they wanted in Lou Williams. But for us, I think he's exactly what we need, is another scoring option off the bench. And our bench is starting to look pretty nasty once all these healthy bodies come into play.
Yeah, I think the good news also with this move is that Lou has made a career out of pick and roll. Either he's on the receiving end, or he's setting, he's setting the screen, or if he's setting it up. He's very good with that, whether he's hand on the ball or off the ball. So I expect him to vibe really well with Capella, John Collins. And even if he's not the pure backup point guard, he'll see some action there.
Yeah, I mean, you can get between him and Bogdanovich, those guys can run the offense.
Or Herter.
For the second unit.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
So, you know, all in all, I mean, Rondo, he had his moments with us, but I don't think any Hawks fan was stoked about his play.
No, I mean, I thought I was starting to see, there was a game, I can't remember if it was the Clippers game or the game before that, but I was watching him play, and he made 5 really good passes, and every single pass was to a guy who was open who missed 3. And I was like, Rondo should have 5 assists in about the span of 3 minutes.
Right.
And it was frustrating that he didn't get those, but I was starting to see more energy from his play. So I was surprised that we made the move, just because it looked like Rondo was starting to play better and mesh better with the guys on the court. But to get cash, which the Hawks will need if they want to do this John Collins deal, and also to shed the weight of that Rondo contract, which you're also on the hook for $7 more million next year.
That's the kicker.
That's big. And Lou Williams, this is the last year of his contract, so it's not necessarily a thing where he's going to be here beyond this year. Could happen, but that'd be a renegotiation. So you're not on the hook. It's a better move for the Hawks long term.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kicker. We're potentially getting the better player here, the better scorer off the bench, and with the better contract and draft picks and cash.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, come on. I mean, Elliot, the Clippers saw what Rondo did with the Lakers last year in the bubble playoffs, and that's what they're counting on. But, you know, the regular season means a lot more to us right now than the playoffs, so Lou Williams.
Yeah, we're just trying to get there.
Yeah, Lou Williams helps us get there more than Rondo does.
Yeah, probably. So, he's still not a good defender, but hoping that he can find a way to also not only just perform on the court, but fill the void that Rondo's left off the court leadership. So I think that's still a big thing for such an impressionable team such as this one.
Which, based off what all the players on the Clippers were saying, he's been the leader of that team for the last 4 years. So I think he will bring exactly what Rondo was in that area.
And the other big news from the trade deadline, Adam, is John Collins stays put.
Yes. Which I'm not surprised by it at all. Like, we've been saying, like, we don't see any scenario where this team, especially when they had gone, like, what, 8-0 at one point,
mm-hmm.
You can't trade John Collins. Like, there was no deals out there that would make sense for a team that's been told you need to, like, we're making the playoffs this year.
Yeah, and Schlenk also said there were never any serious, or offers that we took seriously. There was never anyone out there who was like, oh, man, we got to make this move. It's worth it to make this move.
It's like, I keep going back to this, but rumors are just so stupid. Like, just reading too much into rumors on the internet, especially.
Oh, God.
Like, back in the day, you see a rumor, it'd be like, in the AJC print, it'd be like, okay, this might have some merit.
Might be on the radio.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, it's like, just for a simpler example, the Falcons draft coming up. I read back-to-back rumors where, one, the Falcons are going to draft a quarterback at 4 still, even if the first 3 picks are quarterback. And then, like, the very next day, word around town is Falcons are going to trade back. It's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
We're just throwing shit at a wall, seeing what sticks?
Yeah. We're just trying to create clicks.
But, like, just looking at the John Collins scenario, why would we have traded him?
The only reason you would trade him is if you were getting a player that's comparable or better for him. And there's just no deal out there where a team's going to make that move, I don't think. Like, a team that's rebuilt, like, let's say the Rockets, who suck ass this year. You know, they don't have anyone on that team that you'd want. I'm just trying to think. Like,
well,
yeah.
No, a rebuilding team wouldn't do it because he's not under contract next year.
Yeah, there's that.
They'd have to be a contender.
So, yes, that's important. You have to be a contender. There's a lot of talk about the Celtics wanting John Collins, but they would have to give up a lot to get him and players that they need for the postseason. So it's like, it didn't really make sense for anybody, especially, and a lot of that is dictated by John's contract expiring, I think. But I'm glad he's here, and I hope we're able to re-sign him because, I mean, you saw what he did in that Warriors game after the trade deadline passed. 38 points, like 15 rebounds or something insane.
12 boards, 73% shooting.
Yeah.
Like, career high, 38 points.
Right. So you could tell, just a like, huge weight off his shoulders. And he was so vocal after the trade deadline passed about being, he says, I want to be true to Atlanta. I want to be a Hawk for life. I love Atlanta. I love this place. I love this team. And it was so nice to hear him say that because even though I've felt that before, I think now that he's here for the rest of the year, he's able to say that and feel good about it, even if it doesn't work out, at least for the next couple months. You know, he is a Hawk. He doesn't have to worry about it.
Well, yeah, and it's great to hear that from him. Maybe it was just me reading too much into rumors, but I was starting to get the Devontae Freeman vibe from him, where he's more concerned about his contract than the city and the team. But for him to say he wants to be a Hawk for life, and keep in mind, like, he's a restricted free agent, so we have the right to match any offer.
Yes.
So he could very well be a Hawk. And, like, if you get a guy who wants to be in Atlanta that is as talented as he is, you make them stick in Atlanta because that's how you get Trey to re-sign. That's how you get some veterans to sign back here. Like, you can't let guys like that walk and then go to Brooklyn and win 3 championships.
Yeah, it'll just be interesting to see what he's going to get a lot of offers. There's no question about that. It's just, what are the offers going to be, and are the Hawks going to match that offer? They offered him a 4-year, $90 million extension in the offseason, didn't take it. So that says to me that the offer has to be north of that. It has to be probably at least, I don't know what the max contract is, but it's got to be probably at least $100 million. Are the Hawks willing to match that? That's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, man, I'm sure they would. Like, I mean, that's a pretty beefy offer they gave him already. So, I mean, there's no harm in letting him see the open market so he can see what other teams will offer him and then just match it.
Yeah.
So, maybe other teams aren't willing to give him that much.
Right. We'll see. And I think, like we were talking about earlier, the Rondo deal really opens up the potential. It increases the chance that John is coming back.
Yeah.
Not saying that it will happen, but it increases the chance.
And then as far as the current brutal West Coast trip we're on, been kind of rough. We're 2-5, but we actually started off by beating the Lakers 99-94.
That was huge.
Yeah, a game no one expected us to win. LeBron got hurt. That might have influenced it a little bit.
We were beating them even when LeBron was on the court.
Well, there you go. I didn't watch that one.
I didn't watch it either, but I heard about it. Just because March Madness was happening. It was the worst possible time. It was like, well, it's March Madness or a regular season Hawks game. Sorry, Hawks.
Yeah, that's fair. So there's that, and then just two bad losses to the Clippers and Kings, two games that we should have won. We were up huge on the Clippers.
That Clippers game was rough. I didn't see the Kings game, but I saw the Clippers game. We were kicking their ass. We were up by 20 points at one point. I mean, it was like,
they let the throttle down. So it very much had the look of a Lloyd Pierce team. And we've seen that a couple times. There's that loss to the Clippers and then the loss Sunday night to the Jazz, where blowing big leads, just playing kind of piss poor defense, which are themes you don't want to see with these team. And like, maybe it wasn't all Lloyd Pierce, but also it's been a tough trip. And you're still playing without DeAndre. You're still playing. Like, Cam has been out forever now.
Right. Well, DeAndre, we'll get through your recap and talk a little bit about DeAndre.
Oh, that's pretty much it. I mean,
yeah.
So 2-5 on the current trip. So if
we're,
we win,
we're 23-23.
If we go 3-6 on the trip, mm-hmm. that's fine.
Yeah, we play Phoenix tonight, the night we're recording this on March 30th, and then San Antonio. After that, New Orleans, and then the road trip is over. We play Golden State at home. Hopefully, sans Steph Curry again. I think we're still in a good spot. We're sixth in the East right now. Everybody's stacked up against each other, so there's still a lot of room for maneuvering and things like that. The good news is also, because it's that playing game, right, where the ninth and 10th teams play, correct?
Correct.
So we're 3.5 games ahead of Chicago, who are the 10th seed right now. So we're still in a good spot. It'd be really good to win this game against the Suns. And even though we lost to the Jazz, at least it was still encouraging that we played well against them for a stretch. And their Jazz are really good. I mean, the best team in the West. So, and the Clippers are really good, too. I mean, we knew they were going to wake up at some point. So even though it sucks to lose like that, it's also just veteran teams taking advantage of a young team at the end of the day.
Well, the Clippers were, like, they put their bench in. That's what sucked about it. They had two guys off their bench just go off on us.
Yeah, it was very eerily similar to that Dallas Mavericks game. Where Luka wasn't doing shit and Kristaps wasn't doing shit, but those other guys...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can't remember who it was. Just came in and just shot the lights out.
Right.
The issues that this team has with Lloyd Pierce are not going to be completely improved by McMillan. We're still going to have lapses like this. It's still a team that's figuring itself out. So I don't think it's really anything to worry about. And we're also still only a half game back of New York for the fourth seed. So a lot can happen. Let's talk about DeAndre Hunter, Adam. Came back, what, for the Clippers game, played 20 minutes. I think played 26 minutes for the Warriors game, but now he's got knee swelling. Now he's getting to a point where maybe there's something else going on. We don't know. There was an interesting article on The Athletic with Chris Kirshner talking to Dr. Deepak Chona. So according to Chona, who's just an independent physician, he doesn't have a stake in this, he said, with knee swelling, this is a quote from this article, with knee swelling, particularly after surgery and a period of rest, suggests there is an issue in the knee that is causing it to be inflamed. In Hunter's case, it could be as simple as not being 100% fully healed, or perhaps irritation of an area in the knee that hasn't adequately healed yet. So he's saying there could be an underlying bone bruise, which would mean that if it's an underlying bone bruise, it would just take some time for that to heal, and it's not the end of the world. But there could also be an issue with the cartilage. If there's an issue with cartilage, that's going to require surgery again on this already surgically repaired knee. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
A doctor speculating.
Yeah, he has no idea. Yeah. But he's saying in his experience seeing this happen, this is the two likely scenarios as to what's going on.
So it seems like watching the games that when he first came back, he was not holding anything back.
Yeah.
Like, he was instantly driving hard to the paint.
He looked good.
I mean, he still looked a little rusty, but, like, yeah, he had the same intensity that he had, which I almost think I didn't like seeing that. It scared me every time I saw him go to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you got to hold, as an organization, give him a couple more games, because you know, like, you get a competitor like that in there and a young guy,
he's gonna go all out.
Yeah,
you know?
So that was a little concerning to me. And like we said, the Hawks haven't he's still been like doubtful for all these games, not listed officially as out until closer to tip off. So hopefully it's just some irritation after bringing him back too quickly. But yeah, it we need him, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, we definitely need him, and you just gotta wonder what this means for his knee. I mean, one way I can see this happening is if there is meniscus issues, but he can still play on it, they could try to shoot him up with drugs and anti-inflammatory stuff. But either way...
Dr. Graham over here. Drugs and anti-inflammatory stuff.
Right. That can sort of keep that shit at bay for a while, but if that's the case, he will have to have surgery again at the end of the year and just completely clean that shit out. I hope it's more of the bone bruise kind of stuff and he can lay off for another week or something. But I mean, would you shut him down if it was like, hey, your meniscus is still fucked up? Or would you say, we've got to get to the playoffs and fuck it?
I would let the doctors make that call, Graham.
That's fair. I, not being a medical professional, but having talked more than I ever thought I would about injuries and what happens with injuries on the show in the 4 years we've been doing this, would say that if it's a meniscus issue, probably just shut him down. What's the point of you know, this guy who's had such a great season, who's we view as a key piece of our team, risking further long-term injury down the road?
Got anything else on the Hawks, Dr. Graham?
I do not.
All right, Graham, let's jump into the Falcons real quick. I've got a question for you.
Mm.
What do Fabian Moreau,
Jesus,
Barcavius Mingo,
mm-hmm,
Brandon Copeland, Eric Harris, Lee Smith, and Josh Andrews all have in common?
That they are some of the 2021-2022 Falcons draft or free agent class.
Right, all on one-year deals.
Yes.
For veteran minimums, most likely. I did not mention Mike Davis because he was our bigger signing.
Mm-hmm. Two-year deal.
Two-year deal, $5.5 million.
Total, which is great.
Right, so, but all of these guys are also just like, you know, they're affordable. They have a lot of experience as backups in the NFL, and they're one-year deals. Besides that, I can't tell you too much about any of them except for what position they play and what team they played for last year.
Yeah, the only name that I really know from that list that you just said was Barcavius Mingo. I remember being a pretty formidable linebacker at one point. I haven't heard his name in a few years, so I'm not sure.
He was on the Bears last year.
What he's been doing.
Yeah, I don't think he's played serious minutes in a couple of years.
Yeah, so, you know, this is the kind of moves we're telling you guys was going to happen. And that a lot of people were saying it was going to happen. It wasn't just us. But that because of the cap situation, we're just going to, you know, dirt cheap deals. Dirt cheap deals and dirt cheap guys, and hopefully they can play a decent enough role to contribute. And that's what it is. And that extended to Mike Davis, who is probably the biggest free agent signing, I would say, that we've had, who was the Panthers running back last year, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, many moons ago, it feels like, at this point, when it was still daylight when we were recording. Now we're just sitting here in the darkness like a bunch of fucking trolls. But Mike Davis has been signed to a two-year deal worth $5.5 million. $3 million is guaranteed this year. And he filled in admirably when Christian McCaffrey went down last year for the Panthers. So
he's a tank, impossible to tackle.
Yeah, he's a tough guy for sure. And it's nice because for the first time in a while, we're getting a running back that has a little more. And a lot of this maybe can be attributed to Cutter and how shitty of a play caller he was. But we didn't really target running backs very much out of the backfield. And that was a critical component of the Shanahan offense, I felt like, especially when we had Tevin Coleman, you know, who was going on wheel routes and other crazy routes beyond just running out into the flat like a loser. You know, there's some dynamicism. That's not a word. There was something special about that. Just added a little extra wrinkle that the defense had to worry about. And now that you're getting a guy like Davis, who added 373 receiving yards last year on top of 642 rushing yards. That's over 1,000 yards total of offense. So that's not saying he's like, you know, a force of nature. That's a hell of, and he had 6 touchdowns. And you can say Todd Gurley had 10 touchdowns last year, but can you remember anything else that he did that was half decent in terms of actually, you know, producing big stats on the field except for that one game against, I can't remember, Minnesota or whatever the hell it was?
Well, he wasn't able to fall on the one, which
yes,
kept us drafting at 4 instead of like 10.
Yes, one of those touchdowns was horrible. And but this guy, you know, pretty solid numbers. And, you know, it's not the only year or the only seasons he's done that. He played in Seattle, ran for 754 yards through 2 seasons, averaging over 4 yards a carry, and had 345 receiving yards in those 2 seasons. But last year he was unleashed. McCaffrey offense in Carolina requires the lead back to be able to be a force out of the backfield. So I'm hoping Arthur Smith, Matt Ryan and company can utilize Davis in a similar role, and that he can be a bridge gap to who I assume will be someone we draft this year in the 4th round or something as maybe our future running franchise running back for the next 4 or 5 seasons. So I like this move. He's a solid guy.
So does he give you any Michael Turner vibes at all? And the fact that he's never been given a chance to be the lead guy, just like Michael Turner was in San Diego. And then when he is given the chance, it just clicked immediately. And it, same power running. Michael Turner wasn't like that out of the backfield, though, with the passing game. But just the fact that you can't bring this guy down. I remember the game against the Panthers this year where he just completely went off on us. Yeah. And like it seemed like he'd get – he was the yak leader in the NFL just from watching that one game.
Mm-hmm.
So I see some pretty good potential there. And the fact that we gave him the, this regime who's just trying to piecemeal something together after what Thomas Dimitroff gave them in the cap situation, the fact that they give him a two-year deal, that's a sign that they see him more as just a guy to fill in and be a role player.
I don't think he's going to be as effective as Turner on the ground because I don't think we have the offensive line to facilitate that. Hopefully I'm wrong. But I think he's a very similar profile. And like you said, he's already a better receiver than him. So I love to see Mike Davis go off for 1,000 yards rushing, 400 yards catching out of the backfield with like 8 or 9 touchdowns. That would be a dream. And it seems like it's feasible if the offense can get back to being a balanced attack.
Well, and I like that. It was actually a trade and not a free agent signing Lee Smith, the tight end from Buffalo.
Yeah.
Blocking tight end.
Good blocking tight end.
You know, I mean, that means we're going to be rushing, going for it a little more. And this Josh Andrews guy, he's a center guard, possible backup, but just trying to build some depth on the offensive line at least. And you're going to get – you have to get like 3 starters at least out of this draft coming up.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think we're bringing in Josh Andrews to be our starting center or guard. But, you know.
You need depth there. You only have three backup. I think you only have 3 people, including your boy Hennessy, and you don't know how – 3 people that aren't locked into starting positions yet. So you needed another offensive lineman.
Yeah. Matt Gonneau is there as well.
Right. Matt Gonneau, Hennessy, and some other person I can't remember off the top of my head.
So they're all intriguing a little bit. I read a Raiders Twitter on the safety we got out of Oakland, Eric Harris.
Doesn't profile well from what I read.
Their fans hated him with a passion. It was like we were talking about one of our many failed cornerbacks over the years. Like it was just
like Robert Alford or somebody like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. It was like some Falcons fan posting, so I don't know this guy. What can you tell him about us? And the Raiders guy, he sucks. Yeah, I'm so glad he's gone.
Oh, man.
But, you know, people are bitter, too.
Yeah.
And idiots.
Right. So we'll see how that all shakes out. I don't know. My expectations aren't high for anybody coming over. My expectations are a little elevated for Davis just because we saw what he can do as a starter last year for most of the season in an offense that wasn't spectacular with a quarterback that wasn't as good as Matt Ryan. So I think it's a good move. I like it. I just hope that we also potentially draft a running back this year if we think the one that fits. But if we don't, the good news is we have this guy under contract for next year, and maybe there'll be a better running back in that 2022 draft class.
Yeah, pairing him with Ito is better than what we had last year.
Yeah, Brian Hill's gone. So the only running backs you had were Ito and Kadri Allison.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm. And I guess the only other real news is more restructured contracts. Deion Jones restructured. Mm-hmm. We've got $4 million there. Dante Fowler just gave up money, which was interesting.
Gave
me a little more hope for Dante Fowler. Like,
it give you hope just because it showed that he was a little selfless, or did it give you, or was there another reason that it gave you hope?
Yeah, selfless and wants to prove that last year was a fluke and he was injured.
Okay.
And like he also recognized that he was just going to get cut and not get a lot of this money, but instead we get $7 million in savings from restructuring his contract.
That's big.
So
$7 million is a lot. You can do a lot. Like, we need to do that for the draft class also.
Right.
And the draft is under a month away now, Adam. It's fast approaching.
Yeah, I think we probably still have another move or two to make to get more money to sign those guys, especially for staying at 4.
Well, I'm interested to see if we restructure Grady Jarrett's contract.
Well, he's the only guy left to do it.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be that's it. That's going to happen in the next week or two. We'll probably have it by next week.
And I think we shouldn't speculate on the draft.
No.
Yet.
No.
The only other actual news is that it's official that next year will be a 17-game schedule.
Mm.
So we added Jacksonville to the list. We'll be going to see Urban Meyer.
And your boy Trevor Lawrence.
Ooh, and Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
So that'll be... I like more football.
I like more football. I also like getting the worst team in the league. So...
Good good all around.
Yeah, and I think the cicadas and crickets are telling us to get the fuck out of their out of their house.
It's their time now.
Yeah, so we'll wrap up the show. And thank you guys for bearing with us through all this noise. We hope it's a good episode. I'm sure it was. It felt great. So,
yeah, great to be back in person.
Indeed. And we will see you all next week. Until then, rise up, chop on, unite and conquer, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitamina sip.
Hospitamina sip.